It looked like there might have been something going on. He told Tommy, JD told Tommy that he was all right, but we knew as that at that went on, and ultimately when he got in the dugout is when we really knew that it was the right time. And I think it was the right decision to get him out of there. I'm not second guessing taking him out, that's for sure.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
We're gonna win, Twins. We're gonna score. We're gonna win, Twins. What's that baseball song?
Yeah. Sore is definitely a word that I would use too after yesterday's game. Just
right. Oh, I see what the you other did there. The other spelling. Oh, not the O A R O O R E. Okay.
Go Huskies.
Hey, real quick. Okay, so Rocco Baldelli commenting on the Josh Donaldson tweak. I don't know what you want to call it. Strain. They're calling it a hamstring, and we're going to get into all of this here in a second. But he said as the at bat went along. Did he not? It looked to me like he pulled it running the bases. Did they know that his hamstring was sore while he was batting?
I thought.
Did he start the game with a bad hamstring?
I bet you, because I thought the same thing. I think he's talking about the at bats that came subsequently after Donaldson doubled. So I think he's talking about as the at bat. I think he's saying the at bat. So like Polanco came up,
other
Sano
players
came
and he's
up,
standing out there.
Kepler came up, and as he stood there, and. Probably grabbed his leg a few times because of the said tweak. My guess is they thought to themselves, we really should probably take him out of this baseball game.
Man. So, well, an exciting opening day. Just a heck of a day for the Minnesota Twins. They get a day off here to hopefully stretch their hamstrings and regroup after blowing a 3-run lead.
We need a day off.
Yeah, 1 second, stretching this one out.
Oh, yeah, Declan. I think Declan might have pulled something. Just pushing that button, pushing the Rocco Baldelli.
That's not going to help
button.
Us, though.
Oh boy,
that's not going to help us.
Yeah, you but you know what does guys. Help us when our Minnesota sports teams bleep the bed like the Twins did yesterday, and really like it would be difficult to script a more buzzkill opener where you lose your best overall player in Josh Donaldson. And it's not like, oh, he's been healthy for the most part in his career. Like, no, this is a guy with chronic issues with his legs and calves, and he's out for some undetermined amount of time. Your bullpen melts down. All right, let's do this.
Now on Mackie and Judd.
This chart makes it as clear as I can to you.
The pie chart of blame.
You want to blame somebody?
And gentlemen, the pie chart of blame, I think fittingly, is brought to you today. By our friends at Federated, who provide risk management resources for your business. If you're a business owner and you're looking for peace of mind and risk management, Federated Mutual Insurance Companies have been around for over 100 years.
Do they insure baseball contracts? Because I'd like, you know, there's a certain 4-year, $92 million investment that I'd love to get my hands on some of that cash and have Federated, my friends at Federated, pay it out.
You know, the good news is there's a full list on federatedinsurance.com of industries that Federated does work with and protect. And so, you know, maybe if you're Derek Falvey or Thad Levine, you might just want to go to federatedinsurance.com today. You could check out MyShield. MyShield is a new resource, the online client destination for risk management resources. Find out more about how Federated can protect your business and give you peace of mind at federatedinsurance.com or download the app. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
All right. Everyone knows how this works. If you're new to the show, this is mostly a post-Vikings game segment, but we dust it off when the other teams bleep the bed. The pie chart of blame for yesterday's opening day debacle by the Twins. Judd, lead us off.
Because we treat baseball as football. Because there is no loss too minor for us to break down. Because there is no game, once the regular season starts, too unimportant for us to break down, I bring you a pie chart in six pieces.
Six pieces of pie?
Hell yes.
Wow.
I got a lot of blame to go six around here.
Wow. You got a sharp knife here.
I'll start it. Well, you know what? I am,
who's cutting the pie?
I am famous for my big pieces of pie, or my small pieces of pie, I should say, because my pies have a lot of pieces to them. All right, I'm going to start at the bottom here and work my way up. I've got my pie chart here. I've got my scorecard from the game
here.
The
Rock knows how you feel about pie.
And I will start with two 5% chunks of pie. The first one I'm going to give to what might be at first an unlikely suspect, but he's really not, Miguel Sano.
Oh.
He had a hit in his first at-bat in the third and then came up in the fifth, the sixth, and the eighth, and he struck out each time, including with the bases loaded in the sixth. Two outs, he's at the plate, he has a chance, the Twins have three runs in, he has a chance to break this sucker wide open. Wide open. Miguel Sano, we're all saying, you know, show us something. And his first hit of the season, a little flare to right field. I really liked it. I thought it was on the right track. So I said, yeah, you know what? Show us some more now that the bases are loaded.
A little flare to right field. Just right like, field. This is it.
He went the other way.
Peak Sano.
So that is a 5% chunk of pie. My next 5% chunk of pie is going to go to
the cheap full ads.
The first guy. No, the problem is they weren't cheap. If they had told Donaldson to buzz off, they'd be in a lot better shape right now.
It's true.
5% chunk of pie is going to go to Tyler Duffy, who comes out of the bullpen. It is a very much 2021 situation in that high leverage guy comes out with one out in the fifth, a guy on base. The Twins need help here, and Tyler Duffy is in the game, a predicament in which, you know, 15 years ago, there's no way that you would put a reliever you trust as much as you trust Duffy now in, but you do it for this very reason, and he gives up, what, back-to-back hits, the Brewers score a run. The point being is you were looking for him to shut the Brewers down, and he really didn't come close. A 2 10% chunks of pie, Andrelton Simmons. I sing your praises all spring about how your defense is going to be the answer to our prayers, how you are the anti-Polanco, about how you are the most sure-handed shortstop, gold glove. Phil went through all the statistics and analytics for us on how different this guy is going to make our lives when we see how good he is with the glove, flashing the leather. And Miguel Sano, of all people, starts what should have been a 3-6-3 or 3-6-1 double play by making a perfect throw, which is really tough to do from first to short. And Simmons, I don't care if the sun was in his eyes like they talked about. I don't care what the predicament was. He dropped the baseball. He drops the baseball, and the Brewers score a run in the fifth because of that.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty, and obviously, like, this is one of 162, and
yeah.
Over the course of time, I think you're going to find that Andrelton Simmons is a generationally great shortstop, but it just sort of, it was par for the course yesterday. Of course, the greatest shortstop since Ozzie Smith defensively, and I would put him on the same level as probably Omar Vizquel. Like,
yeah, which
not
is
as much of a household name.
Fantastic.
And of course, he makes that
yes.
bobble at second base yesterday. Of
yes.
course.
So he gets a 10% chunk of my pie chart of blame. The next 10% goes to our guy in the dugout, Rocco Baldelli. And it's really based off this. In the 10th, okay, you start with a guy on second. Navarez gets a hit. And then instead of walking Arcia to load the bases in that predicament, to set up a force out on the ground ball to second base, you don't. And so now it's a must-tag play at home plate. And what? The ball is hit high in the air to second base. Polanco comes home. Garver tries to get the tag down, does not. I'm very confused about why you wouldn't. Like this is, and I got this tweet from a fan yesterday, and it's exactly right. This is akin situationally to 3-on-3 OT in hockey. Like, it's not a normal, like, you start with a guy in second base. So, like, you got to think outside the box as to if something starts to go wrong, what the approach is going to be. I'm a little bit confused there.
So, I think, so, yeah, there's going to be some interesting strategy discussions about the bottom half of these innings. The top half, your goal is to score as many runs as possible, right?
Correct.
But the bottom half, you've already sort of seen
yes.
the other team has served. or you, I guess you have served offensively and you've sort of seen how it goes.
Yes.
And so I would even, and I don't know if the inning would have played out differently, but I would even consider walking the first hitter.
Yes.
So that there's, because like that run doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If the winning run is on second.
Right.
And some of it depends on like, all right, what part of the lineup's coming up? Would you rather fit, like, if you walk the first batter, does that mean Mike Trout is going to hit third in the inning? Like, you know, so there's certain things lineup wise.
But this was not
that. But yeah, no,
you're right.
I hear
here.
You.
You're right.
I would think that you'd want. I would think that you would want as many force out opportunities as possible.
Yes.
Without like loading the bases with nobody out to put a ton of pressure on your pitcher to not throw a ball.
Agree
right?
completely.
So there's going to be a lot of dissection, I think, in that.
The Rock knows how you feel about
final
pie.
Piece of pie, 70%. It goes to the obvious suspect, Alex Colome. What are you doing? Like, beyond the meltdown on the mound itself, what are you doing when you get a ball hit back to you? You're up by, I believe, three at that point. Throw to first base and get the out, and now there's two outs. And yeah, there's a guy on second, but you're up by multiple runs. Just throw to first base, and you get cute, and you make too high a throw to Polanco. Now everybody is safe. It just made no sense.
Yeah,
like it just made it was fundamentally just absolutely a brain fart and stupid, but. He melted down, and I get that part, but he could have saved himself all of those problems. And now you've got to face Yelich. Now, you know, all hell's going to break loose. So 70% goes to that move because that decision to throw cost them the baseball game.
Yeah. So there. So give us the recap again. Judge Legette's pie chart of blame.
Colome 70%. Baldelli 10%. Andrelton Simmons, welcome to town with that glove of yours, 10%. And then Duffy and Sano, 5% each.
All right, so I'm going to go with four evenly sliced pieces of pie here.
Okay,
just four. I like to keep it simple, just 25, 25, 25. 25% to the shadows. It's very difficult to play shortstop when shadows. I would say the wind gets 25%. The Twins would have had five more home runs. If not, no, I'm just kidding. All right, piece of pie number one. Josh Donaldson's 80-year-old legs.
Yep.
I mean, if it's not calves, it's hamstrings. This dude literally spent the and I'm feel like I like this dude. Like he's a great player, and so I want to be respectful of him as a talent and as a player, and I think as a leader too, in certain areas. But he's got 80-year-old legs. You know, he spends the entire offseason reworking his running motion and presumably finding more treatments for his calves and. I am not a medical expert, but sometimes when you put a ton of focus on one area, it can lead to problems in other areas. Or sometimes when you have weakness in one area, would it be kinesthetically? I don't know.
I think that's right.
Kinesthetically, right?
Yeah, I watch St. Cloud. Yep, I think that's right.
Like when someone has an elbow problem and they start to compensate for the elbow problem, their shoulder goes out, right? And so I just wonder if he spent the entire offseason, if it is indeed a hamstring injury, which... I'm not 100% sold on. I wouldn't be shocked if it was a calf, and they're like, let's not get people to panic too aggressively. But what really, when your message is, don't worry, it's just a hamstring injury for a guy who's in his mid-30s, it's a problem. So Josh Donaldson's 80-year-old legs. 25% to just across-the-board atrocious defense, plays that should have been made. They were credited, I think, with two errors, but there were just plays that should have been made all over the diamond.
Right. Yep.
So horrible defense. I think their defense is going to be a strength for them if they keep Andrelton Simmons and Byron Buxton on the field. And, I mean, Josh Donaldson's going to be out for a while at this point. Piece of pie number three. I'm going to say the Twins' propensity to melt when the lights are the brightest.
Ooh, I like it.
And that can be playoffs. Opening day has not been super kind to this franchise over the years as well. I mean, I don't have the record in front of me, but it just seems like there's a lot of bad things that happen on opening day for the Twins. And this might have taken the cake just in terms of the meltdown and Josh Donaldson going down. But it just kind of feels like when more people are watching and staring, the Twins rarely rise to the moment. And I don't know if it's just... coincidence, it's multiple eras of GMs and managers and players, but yesterday. It wasn't like the lights were super bright. It was just Brewers and Twins on opening day.
Yeah, you're in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. How bright can it be?
But it's the first game of the year. It's a new TV network. There's fans in the stands for the first time in a year and a half.
Are you talking about Bally's?
You melted down.
Bally's Sports Network? Is that what you're talking about?
An American Family Ballpark?
Let's talk about Bally's after our pie charts. Okay. We'll get our initial reviews of Bally's.
Okay.
Miller Park.
And then pie chart or piece of pie number four, it's probably unfair to just like lump him in without lumping in other hitters who also failed. The Twins left a million runners on base yesterday. But Judd brought up Miguel Sano. Miguel Sano came up multiple times, a couple times with two outs, runners in scoring position or bases loaded, and he struck out three times in that game yesterday. And so the reason I'm putting Miguel Sano in this bin and sort of singling him out, it's a career achievement award piece of pie for Sano. Miguel Sano's career batting average with the bases loaded is 159. 159 is his career
with how many strikeouts
batting average.
Do you have that in front of you?
So he has come to the plate 50 times in his career with the bases loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And he has 21 strikeouts in those 50 plate appearances. 42% strikeout rate in situations with the bases low. He has one grand slam.
Yep.
So he has the one grand slam.
That's good. JK,
but he is terrible. He's one of the worst hitters in baseball with the bases loaded.
Yes.
It is. Royce kind of alluded to it earlier this. I think it was on maybe Wednesday's edition of Rapping with Royce. He said in those key moments late in the game, two outs, there are very few hitters you'd rather see at the plate if you're an opposing team than Miguel Sano. And a lot of fans might be like, what are you talking about? The guy can hit the ball 500 feet. Not with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
He's done it once. So
he is ripe for a bad at-bat.
Miguel Sano, the Twins' propensity to melt when the lights are the brightest, horrible defense, and Josh Donaldson's 80-year-old legs. Declan?
All right.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
I'm a gentleman. I'll start from the bottom, work my way up. My smallest piece of pie, I got four pieces of pie. 5% goes to Major League Baseball. Not the sport of baseball. Not the idea of baseball. Major League Baseball. There is a league here where we have to have a pitcher bat still. We are in 2021, and you cannot have a designated hitter. We had it last year because it was fun, and it was weird, and it was a 60-game season. But, we're not going back to it this year. We got to have pitchers hit. We got to have your best player on the bench if you're the Twins. Major League Baseball.
I thought that Woodruff at bat was
totally
absolutely
the Miami at bat where he bunted the guy to second was beautiful and resulted in runs. So both of you.
You know, I couldn't imagine being a football team and, you know, you're in the AFC and you can't have a three wide receiver set because, the AFC only has two wide receiver set limits. You can't have enough fun in your lineup. So Major League Baseball, you get 5% of the blame just for your dumb rules and I can't stand it. So 5%. Well, Josh Donaldson actually gets blamed for me here. 10% of my blame goes to Josh for the injury because then it just set off another catastrophic things of events. So you have Luis Arraez, who was in left. He now has to come in to third. Jake Cave now has to enter the game and be in the lineup for the whole game. His injury is a string of problems that end up happening for the Twins. So actually, I do put blame on Josh Donaldson here. His injury caused an issue that rippled throughout the course of the game. So Josh Donaldson does get 10% of my blame. Baldelli gets 15% because maybe this is more of the bright lights and the primetime situations. So I kind of understood why you put all your firefighters out after Maeda. You went Duffy, then Stashek, then Taylor Rogers, Hansel Robles, who actually looked pretty damn good. I'll eat my own words. I texted you guys that I think if anyone's going to blow it right here, it's going to be Robles. He looked awesome. He was firing bullets. Good for him. And then Colome. So now Colome comes in, and I'll get into the blame there with him in a minute. But after that, you know Josh Hader hasn't pitched yet for the Brewers. So you know if you go to extra innings, you're probably going to lose this game. And in Josh Hader's case, 11 pitches, 9 strikes, 5 swinging strikes, 3 strikeouts. You didn't stand a chance. I saw some tweets saying, well, it was their best contact hitters they could face. Like, those are the best guys you could have up. It didn't matter, dude. It's Josh Hader. You don't stand a chance against Josh Hader. Zero chance. So Baldelli gets 15% with just the management of the game. My final chunk of pie, 70% goes to Alex Colome. Brother, you had a pinch hitter coming up to lead the game. Then you had the top of the lineup. There's a runner at first. All you have to do is throw that ball to first in the other hand. Because if you throw to second, Christian Yelich is coming up. So the one of the best players in the Major League Baseball. Worst case scenario, you take that out at first and Yelich comes up, hits a bomb, you still have a lead. You still have a one-run lead. And instead you try to get cute and turn a double play when you could have just got the second out of the inning right there by underhanding it to first, dude. So Alex Colome gets 70% of my blame, too, for not recognizing that you are facing the heart of the Brewers' order. So my four pieces of pie, 5% to Major League Baseball, 10% to Josh Donaldson, 15% to Rocco Baldelli, 70%
to Alex Colome. The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Wow.
Very spiritual.
That was therapeutic. That was therapeutic. So Judd has him at 96. I have him at 94. Declan had him at 92 or something?
Yeah, I think 91, 92.
91?
Yeah.
Are you guys, after the first game... we have to stick to our predictions because that's how it works. But like, if you could take a mulligan and re-predict, would you come off of your prediction?
No, I'm not.
Good. I mean, the Josh Donaldson thing. Now, we all expected he would miss some time.
Yeah,
I don't think he's. I don't think he plays in April.
I agree completely. No, he won't play. In fact, if I had to put $5 down on this, I say his next appearance is somewhere around like May 10th or something. He's 35, and it's a hamstring. Like, let's just say that it has nothing to do with the calf, okay? Nothing. The calf, it's not involved, which I find hard to believe, but let's just say that. He's a 35-year-old man with a hamstring problem then, okay? Like, when's the last time, Phil, that you said, you know, that makes me feel a lot better. It's only a hamstring.
Dude, here's what doesn't make any sense to me, okay? So we watch football on a regular basis and basketball and hockey, right? And let's say basketball and football because those are at least like – with hockey, it's a different mechanic.
Motion.
You have knives on your feet, for God's sakes, right? So it's just a different motion. Basketball players – soccer players, football players are bursting, sprinting for hours. It's just like boom, 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 right? Every play, up, down. Mm-hmm. And like, when's the last time you heard of a basketball player like pulling a hamstring? It never happens. When's the last time a Wolves player like missed a month with a hamstring or a calf, right? So in these sports where you are running all the time, and maybe that's part of it, you're running all the time, and so your muscles are properly stretched. In baseball, there's a lot of standing around and your muscles have a chance to cramp up. Like, this dude pulls something and is out for months every single year. Is it something that is unfixable? Are there not trainers or methods out there that he can tap into?
Like, he's tried, dude. This is his fourth time now. 17, 18, 20, and now he has, we like to call it a chronic condition. Like, we should just call it what it is. Something about his body and I'm sure his age is sabotaging him. Like, these are the type of things that eventually get people to retire. Because you're right. Like, if this was a really common thing, you'd say, it's bad luck, right? Like, it's bad luck and he's having bad luck. This is clearly, when we're talking about four times, and when, as Dex has said before too, Phil, when we're talking about a guy who came out on Twitter last year and said that I've done this seven times in like a two-year period... That's chronic. That's a condition. Like, he has a condition. Like, we need to accept the fact. But this is also why when we all, and we're guilty of this, fan base is, this is why when we're always like, well, cheap poll ads, sign a free agent, sign Josh Donaldson, they signed him. You can't now turn around and be like, well, you should have known about this and done a better job. Like, this is what happens when you pay aging players big contracts.
Yep.
It really is.
And he was one of the best players on the market. He's a former MVP. Clearly, when he's healthy, he's impactful. But, hey, because we have to get to Gerson Rosas, and we have to get to Judd's first ever viewing of The Mighty Ducks, inexplicably, for Sports Movie Rewind. Your guys' quick thoughts on the debut of Bally Sports North for Twins games yesterday.
I actually don't mind it because, well, one, it's a name change, and it's a brand change as far as, like, a graphics going stuff, but it's not like a huge change of announcers and lots of things. I don't love, but I don't mind the score box, which seems to be the most talked about thing.
Mm-hmm. I think people don't like that the out of town scores are just taking up half of the
and
that's going to be for there's going to be gambling odds bit. On that once.
Oh yeah,
but that's
sense.
That's what's coming next too. Like, we have to brace ourselves for eventually here, like, in-game prop bets and stuff are coming, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what's coming. That box is not there because this is how it's going to be now. That box is there because of what you just said. Like, they are basically preparing for Log on now and bet on is Miguel Sano going to strike out? The answer is yes. How much do you want to bet on that?
Yeah. It's actually kind of genius. I mean, at some point, you're going to be able to open the Bally's app or something, the Bally's Sports app. If maybe it already exists,
How's Dick going to handle that?
I don't think he was already complaining yesterday about both name changes in the ballpark with the
like
name. It was subtle. It was very Minnesota.
I'm an idiot, and so I had the MLB package, and I thought I only got access to the Brewers play-by-play feed. So I spent the first like 7 innings watching the Brewers.
Come
commentary.
On, you got it.
And then I figured out, oh, you can just like, you can choose which feed you want to watch. And so I finally got the Bramer Morneau.
Yeah.
So was Bramer complaining about the name change?
It was very subtle with the way he went about it. He goes, well, you know, we got a lot working with us here. You know, there's a new ballpark. We got a new brand. I think we're doing a good job trying to mention it and not screw it up. And then I think even Morneau said, well, you did call it.
What's there to screw up?
Well, Morneau then goes, well, you did call it Miller Park an inning ago. Like, he did kind of throw him under the bus, which was pretty funny. I mean, I don't watch. This was my first time watching Bally Sports North. I typically, for Wild games, watch the opposing broadcasts like Phil with using a game center, you could say. And so I usually watch the opposing broadcast. I didn't mind it. It's so nitpicky to just get upset over a lower third. Like, for God's sakes, people, the game is on. That's all I care about. Is the game on? Are you really that upset that there's this portion of the screen devoted to AL West scores? Like, pick your battles. Pick your battles.
Dick's,
I don't know.
Dick's line.
People hate change.
Dick's line was this. It's not Bramer Sports Network. It's Bally's. I didn't buy the entire network. That was Dick's line. But the funniest thing about it was the official debut, the first game with the new name, was the Wolves-Knicks game Wednesday night. And, like, Dave Benz couldn't stop saying it. Like, yeah, Bally Sports, this is great. Bally Sports, Bally Sports, Bally. Bramer barely mentioned Bally Sports.
Yeah, he just tried to stay away from screwing it up. So yeah, I was fine with it. I like the branding. I like the colors.
I like the colors more.
The music change, finally get some different music than the ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. Like, we've been hearing that for 20 years.
I like the red.
Actually, 25 years.
I'm with
you
on
that. Yeah, the red, it's sharp.
It stands out.
I'm here for it. And I'm all about opening up the floodgates for more gambling and more vices. So I'm for it. All right, boys, we gotta reset here so we can talk to our friend, President of Basketball Operations, Gerson Rosas, and do a deep dive into a Minnesota sports movie classic, The Mighty Ducks. That's your pie chart of blame for the Twins' opening day debacle.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
I trust all these guys at the shop, but we're talking specifically about Ann. And, you know, when he's playing bad and he's that focused in the fourth quarter and he's, you know, going downhill, he's special. It's just as simple as that. And, you know, obviously in the fourth quarter, he was special. But, you know, I think as he matures, he's going to be doing what he does in the fourth quarter for all 48 minutes. And I think he's going to start just blossoming into the superstar we all seem to be.
Well, Anthony Towns, I think sharing the sentiment that we all share, that Ant Edwards is destined for some stardom in his future. Gerson Rosas, President of Basketball Operations for the Minnesota Timberwolves, joins the show, and it's probably like his fourth appearance on the show. We thank him for taking time out of his schedule. We want to talk about Ant with you. We want to talk about the team and everything, but I'm going to guess you're a little distracted going into the weekend with your Houston squad set to play in the Final Four, sir.
Great question. Definitely.
You did that on purpose.
I had to get it out of the way early.
Anytime. I mean, it was a very thoughtful, great, personalized question. I mean, what do you want me to?
You got to compliment the background work. I appreciate that. No, it's it's a fun weekend. Kelvin Sampson and I worked together at Houston, and then he transitioned over to the University of Houston. So it's special. It's a great run. But even for all of us, just to have March Madness back, just to have the tournament back, some level of normalcy. But no, it's. It's great to have the Cougars there. Tough game on Saturday versus Baylor, very talented team. It's going to be a dogfight. But it's exciting to have that program back where it's at now and to be able to enjoy it, especially this close here in the Midwest. It is going to be a little distracting. But a lot of good basketball this weekend.
So on your team, how do you go about trying to judge a team and a coach when you make a change like you did as far as trying to get a read on what Chris Finch needs as far, and it's tough because there's not a lot of time to practice too. So it's a ton of games for a guy who just stepped in. What is the rest of this year about for you and Chris Gerson as far as the evaluation process goes?
That's a hard reality for us. It's a very unique year, and everybody's trying to do their best to move forward in this season. But for us as a young team with the need for practice, with the need for development, you add a new coach into the mix. It's challenging, but you guys know the reality. Nobody's feeling sorry for us. Nobody's going to give us an extra month of practice just for this because that's what we need. So we have to do the best that we can with the information we can and be as aggressive as we can. Like, where we're at is not where we want to be, but we're fortunate we're establishing a foundation of great players in Cat and good young players in terms of building the foundation. We don't know what we have right now with D'Angelo and Cat and the rest of our group. Some of our players have even brought up to me there. You know, D'Angelo hasn't played with this Anthony. D'Angelo hasn't played with this Jaden. And we have to figure that out. So for that reason, these last 25, 24 games are critically important to us in that this is our games. These are our practices. This is our off season. This is our training camp from last year. We've got to really maximize where we're at. And a big part of the coaching change during this season is we really – needed to readjust our identity, both from an offensive and defensive perspective and as a platform for our young players to develop. And that's something that talking with ownership as we discussed the big picture, it was necessary that we did it as soon as possible to get through these growing pains and these learning curves now. I don't know what this offseason looks like. I don't know what next preseason looks like. We're not guaranteed anything, so we have to bring the change that we need now. And I'm very confident that the success we're going to have next year is going to be attributed to the changes we made now and the steps forward that we took as an organization, both individually with our players, figuring out what we have with this group, getting more than five games out of D'Angelo and Cat together with this with our core together. And moving forward into this offseason, realizing what we have, what we need, and how do we address those situations.
And so, Gerson, you brought up that like D'Lo hasn't played with this version of Ant Edwards. And so that maybe partially answers my next question. And I'm going to preface this by saying I quit basketball in eighth grade because the conditioning was too aggressive. And so this is a complete amateur observation. You know, when you know, Basketball Reference has amazing tools, and you can go check out lineup combinations, and D'Lo plus Ant on the court at the same time has been a lot of negative value for you guys in the box score, but that combination really only played before the All-Star break because D'Lo's been out. And so I guess my question is, they haven't looked great together on the court. What can they look like on the court, and what gives you confidence that they can play together for large chunks of minutes when he comes back?
Yeah, so a big part of that was the philosophical change. And I didn't feel like the system, the structure that we had in place was conducive, not only to our top guys, but to our young guys moving forward. And we had to change that infrastructure. And Coach Finch and the staff and the players deserve a lot of credit in that you're seeing incremental developments in our program. And a big part of that is the development of our young guys. I think it's no surprise that Anthony Edwards is named the Rookie of the Month this month. And it's because of the comfort level in this system, the comfort level in this program and in this offense and in this defense. I think we've put ourselves in a situation now where we have platforms where guys can operate to their strengths. By no means have they figured it out. There's a long stretch of development. But those are key areas for us, like how do D'Angelo and Ant work together, and how can we put them in a position? I think Chris Finch has an incredible offensive mind. He's done a good job of not only putting these guys in a position to be successful, but coaching them and holding them accountable. Ant missed a couple of the last fourth quarters here over the last week, 10 days, and those were important teaching and development moments for him, and it's the reason why he can bounce back. But I do feel we're going to have a structure in place where we can not only put D'Lo in a position where he can be successful and productive,
Ant Beasley, which we haven't had together, Jaden McDaniels and his development and growth. But it all comes together because we have a very unique and special superstar in Karl-Anthony Towns who wants it to happen. And he's not a guy that's trying to get stats. He's not trying to get points. He wants to win. And my job is to bring as much talent as possible on this team. Our coaches, it's their job to make it work. And it's our players' job to commit to what we're trying to do in order to be successful. And since the change, you know, we're playing close to a 500 level. Guys are playing more consistent. Our focus has been to do offensively and defensively the things we can recreate game in and game out. And that's our focus here for the rest of the season.
The Carl thing's interesting in that I think, you know, on one side of it, there's how do players just sort of fit together schematically. But then there's also the personality and leadership pecking order. And my own observation, it's never seemed to me that Cat has felt super comfortable as like a vocal and personality leader. And maybe you disagree with that, but Ant seems comfortable with that. I mean, Ant Edwards is 19 going on 30 with sort of his confidence and personality. And Carl seems comfortable sometimes just deferring that side of it to Ant. I mean, is that a misread, or is that how you sort of look at it?
No, I think that's a fair assessment. And, you know, I've been in the league close to 20 years. You're not going to change guys. Guys are who they are. You can only put them in a position where they can be successful. Carl is he's a leader in his own way. He's more of a guy that talks to guys individually. He gives them a lot of confidence. There's a special relationship with him there. But he's different. And I don't want him to be somebody he's not. I don't want any of these guys to be somebody they're not. And is who he is. He's a ball of energy, charismatic force that loves playing, loves winning, and is a youthful energy that's trying to figure things out. And we needed that. When we drafted him, I saw him as a good complement to Cat, to D'Lo, to some of our other guys, because he has that charismatic personality. And he's driven to be great. Like, he doesn't know what he doesn't know. He's scratching the surface. This is a football player turned basketball player who should be a freshman in college this year. But he's got a grit and a spirit to him that's very special, and you see that. And the thing that I value the most is his ability to allow himself to be coached. He's not in here griping about not playing fourth quarters. He's understanding that he needs to play better. And that's where we see the development. That's where we see the growth. That's where we see the adjustment of a game like the New York game, where he just takes over. And for a 19-year-old who has no idea what he's doing, who doesn't understand it, but has incredible freakish talent and physical tools, that's a great sign for us. But nobody wants to win more than Cat, and he wants to make sure these guys are in a position to be themselves, to be productive, and to help us win.
So what is your expectation with a training camp with Finch, you know, obviously having time to get to know these players? Gerson, what's your thought process and expectation for how different the 2021-22 season can be for this team once there's time for things to progress? Are we talking about a huge step up, like potentially a playoff type turnaround? Are we talking about it's still going to be gradual? What do you want to see, and what do you think you'll see?
Well, philosophically, systematically, I expect major change. As much as Chris is changing this season, it's a more of a less is more approach. So we're trying to take things out. We're trying to focus on the most important things, and we're trying to be consistent. We're trying to create a competitive spirit, and you're seeing it. A lot of the things over our last 8 to 10 games have been our guys trying to adjust, especially with young players trying to figure out whether it's game plans or opponents or what's going on. But I love that our spirit has become, we're not going to give up. We come back from falling to big leads, and that's not a trend we want to have. We want to get better starts, but we want to have a competitive spirit where we're never out of a game. And to win the New York game the way we won it, with stops, rebounds, defensive plays, that speaks to the group that we're becoming. But I do think, in a big way, what we're going to see this next year from this team is going to be totally different. A full off season, a full training camp under Chris Finch and his staff, we're going to be a lot different. And there's only so much you can impact at this stage with games, limited practices. But there's a big urgency going into next year. We have to take a step forward. We have to be more consistent. We have to be more productive. And it's got to be more about winning.
What is the thing that Chris Finch is the best at in your mind?
Well, when, you know, his perspective, like being a coach for 30 plus years all over the world, being a head coach for 20 plus years, he's got an incredible basketball mind, and it's developed through different experiences at different level playing and having had different players at different levels. But his ability to connect the dots from offense to defense, his ability to put guys in a position to be successful, but he's got an edge, and his ability to let players know how much he cares while at the same time hold them accountable and call them out in a way that's conducive to winning is pretty unique and special.
Yeah. I love the anecdote that he, in one of the games where Ant was benched for the fourth quarter and they sat down and watched film and talked about it. I mean, that's awesome. And the fact that the player is good with that and the coach is comfortable having that conversation, I mean, that's how it should be.
Well, where we're at is about winning, and it's not about your feelings. It's not about good play, bad play. It's what do we need to do to win? And our players are committed to that. Our coaches are committed to that. The organization is committed to that. We don't have time for all the other things. We've got to get to the heart of the issue, and that's how to figure out how to win consistently.
Thanks, right. Gerson. Great stuff.
Gerson, good stuff, man. We'll talk again sometime probably between end of season and draft so we can ask you a bunch of invasive questions about. Hopefully you guys keep the pick, but I know you guys
he'll tell us exactly what the plan is.
We'll be in the war room.
Yeah.
We'll be in the war room.
You guys, show us the board, Gerson. Show us the board.
You guys will know that, but I'm expecting another call next week in case a certain team advances there to Monday. I don't want to forget about that.
Actually, if that happens, let's just do a breakdown of the championship game. We don't even have to talk Wolves.
Hey, I'm game.
Gerson. When is D'Lo going to be back, do you think? How soon?
He's soon. Okay. He's soon. I expect him here sooner rather than later over the next week. He's working hard. Hopefully we haven't had any setbacks, but we need him back on the court soon, and he's working hard to get back there.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Bye, Gerson.
Thanks, Gerson.
Thank you, guys.
He's got to get to a meeting, and he refused to let us in the Zoom meeting, so we'll let him go. Gerson Rosas, president of basketball operations for the Timberwolves. And by the way, his appearance brought to us by Dennis Kirk. So Dennis Kirk is the absolute best in the business when it comes to motorcycle riding, sport bike, metric cruises, whatever you ride, they've got parts for you. 160,000 parts and accessories in stock, clothing and helmets. If you order before 8 p.m., they ship the same day. And shipping is free for orders over $89. The sun is starting to come out more often. The weather is starting to turn. And so that means it's riding season. DennisKirk.com. Everything you need for your ride at DennisKirk.com. Before we jump into Judd's first ever review of the Mighty Ducks here, I love having him on. I mean, he's always super honest, and without going too aggressively in on Ryan Saunders or mentioning his name, you know, when we ask the question, what makes you think that Ant and D'Lo can coexist on the court, knowing that they're like a, I didn't have the numbers in front of me, but they're like a minus 30 per 100 possessions or something, small sample size, and he said, yeah, well, the old infrastructure and system was the main reason for that, and we feel like Chris Finch's infrastructure and system and the way that Ant has evolved is going to fix that problem. So he didn't name Ryan, but he was
well. And clear. Ryan, as we talked about back when he got the full-time job, was put in a very difficult situation for his age. Like that's not the
absolutely
that's not the norm. I mean, Chris Finch is I think 51, and Chris Finch comes in with a background, and I mean the fact is, look. Ryan Saunders does not bench Ant for the end of two games. He just doesn't. And Ant was benched. He's flat out benched. Now, he takes it well. He deserves it, and he knows he does. But Ryan's not going to do that. He is not in a position in life yet. He will be eventually at some point. So, yeah, it's not a surprise that the Wolves had to get as far as the person who was coaching them, more structure. And now the next thing, though, is going to be, and this is going to be key, managing the egos of guys and how this starts to play out. Because Ant is not going to be the lovable 19-year-old kid for perpetuity. He's going to become more authoritative probably and become more sure and, you know, not defer as much. I don't know, but things will change. And the question is, can the person who is in charge of managing these egos handle it? And that's D'Lo, if he's here. That's Kat. That's Ant. Beasley.
Pominville.
Pominville.
It's a difficult thing.
Pominville.
Where Pominville come from? But it's a different, you know, it's difficult. So I'm just curious to my question is, what's the expected pop-up from right now to next year at this time?
Yeah.
Because you can't just stink forever.
Yep, and so much of it depends on if they keep the draft pick and if they decide to get frisky with trades this offseason, which Gerson loves to do. They also, there's a reason why they hired the trade machine guy.
And they didn't make any trades, right, at the deadline. So they're overdue now.
So, all right, so thank you to Gerson Rosas for coming on the show. And you know what? Let's if Houston wins, so they'll play the championship game on Monday night. I mean, he basically asked to come back on the show, and so let's reach out. It would be more fun if they won the whole thing, and then we could have him on to celebrate the whole thing. Maybe we'll just get him on three times in a week. And see
I'm sure he'd love that. He's got plenty of time.
Yep. All right, before we get to Judd's first ever viewing of the Mighty Ducks, have you been to PXG Minneapolis yet? It's a golfer's paradise over there at PXG Minneapolis. The new Gen 4 golf clubs have landed. These are the best performing clubs PXG has ever made. And this is a company that makes really good golf clubs. They also have the 0 to 11 golf clubs in stock, which is also a full line of high performance clubs packed with PXG technology, priced a little bit more within reach. If you just want to look sharp, if you just want, maybe your game is a train wreck,
that's
or Judd.
That's me.
Just want to look sharp.
Yeah. Looking sharp.
Yeah, the best hair of the show.
As Joe Jackson said, look sharp.
Absolutely.
Yep. So PXG's new spring and summer apparel line also just arrived. PXG Minneapolis in Southdale Center. And find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis. Quack. Quack. Quack.
We lost a few games. Tough. That was District 5. Now we're the Ducks.
Yeah.
And the Ducks are undefeated.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quack. 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 Quack.
Quack.
Quack,
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 quack, quack, quack, quack,
quack,
quack,
quack. Oh, yeah.
Welcome in. We don't have an intro for this yet because this is a new iteration of our movie review series. A little over a year ago, we launched Action Movie Rewind. We did about 45 action movies. We're going to definitely go back to Action Movie Rewind at some point. The masses were also clamoring for us to expand our horizons, so we did a handful of rom-com rewinds, and that's been a blast, and we will also keep doing those. But it's been a year since we dove into the movie review business here on Mackie and Judd, and we have yet to review a true sports movie. There's been some rom-coms with sports themes, and an NBA Finals rom-com,
yes,
and
right?
I lose a guy in 10 days.
Sacramento Kings against the Knicks in the NBA Finals.
But we have yet to actually dive into a sports movie review. And so consider this the launch of Mackie and Judd's sports movie review. And Declan, if you just, cut me off with a soundbite at any point here. Mighty Ducks, the original Mighty Ducks from 1992, a Minnesota-based sports movie classic.
District 5 Pee Wee Hockey Team. I'm Gordon Bombay. I'm the new coach. Afraid so, dude. Got the roster right here. Averman, Dave, Conway, Charlie, Paul, Terry. Now here's the long and the short of it. I hate hockey and I don't like kids.
Was supposed to be a pep talk?
Look, I'm sure this will be a real bonding experience. And maybe one day, one of you will even write a book about it in jail.
Funny.
Is there a goalie?
Only for a little while. I'm moving back to Philly.
Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
All right. Get out on the ice. Let me see
a
what
leave
you can
of
do.
Absence? He can't do that. He can't stop me from working.
He's not. I am. That was my condition. Gordon, you need a break. You're too wrapped up in your work.
Sir, my work is my life.
That's just my point. The community service will do you good. It'll teach you compassion, a sense of fair play, and how to fit in.
Community service? This is horrible.
You'll get used to it. And hopefully you'll come back a better person and a better attorney, which is why I'm keeping you on salary and have arranged a driver for you.
Gentlemen, after reckless young lawyer Gordon Bombay, played by Emilio Estevez, gets arrested for drunk driving, he must coach a kids' hockey team for his community service. Gordon has experience on the ice, but he's not super eager to return to hockey, a point hit home by his tense dealings with his own former coach, Jack Riley, played by Lane Smith. The reluctant Gordon eventually grows to appreciate his team, which includes promising young Charlie Conway, played by Josh Jackson, later on famous for being in Dawson's Creek, and leads them to take on Riley's tough players, the Hawks. Only 23% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Very
which
low.
Is just a travesty. The critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes says the Mighty Ducks has feel-good goals, but only scores a penalty shot for predictability.
Oh, boy.
Well, yeah.
$14 million budget turned into $51 million at the box office, so it was pretty successful.
Yep.
Emilio Estevez, Josh Jackson, Jussie Smollett was in this. He was in that well, he had a huge controversy
yeah.
where he faked getting assaulted.
I didn't know he was in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was,
oh, man.
He was one of the kids on the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie was directed by Stephen Herrick, who also directed Mr. Holland's Opus, 101 Dalmatians, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, The Three Musketeers, and Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Oh, so great little run, great movie. 90s. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead's fantastic. Yeah.
So this was the first. Now, Declan, you've seen this before.
Plenty of times. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Numerous times. It's been a few years.
I've seen this a million times, and we also might have to do D2 and D3 at some point. And the new series just came out on Disney Plus. But this was Judd Zulgad, noted hockey obsessor and enthusiast.
Love Slapshot, the movie, yes.
Lifelong Minnesotan. So, like, two things that are themes in your life.
Yep.
And you've never seen the Mighty Ducks until this week. So we'll start with Judd, your key takeaway from this movie.
Well, first of all, in my defense, I was 22-ish when this came out, and this is not exactly a film for a 22-year-old who is young and going to bars. And
what do you mean? There's a ton of drinking in this movie. A little too much, actually.
Well, yeah. First of all, Gordon Bombay, you didn't just drink and drive. You were swerving all over the place, and you were completely – I love the fact that he's going, like – 80 miles an hour downtown or something. And
he's
like
a blizzard, by the way.
Yeah, and he's drinking and he's swerving. And he's a lawyer and he doesn't think to himself, I really should slow down and probably shouldn't be drinking with an open bottle right now.
Actually, since you brought that up, can we just get right into that? Because that's one of my main takeaways from this movie, too, is that he might be the worst and dumbest buzzed driver of all time. Like, you should not be drunk driving and buzz driving.
He's loaded.
He has an open bottle of beer that he's just pounding.
Which he throws in the back.
Throws in the back. He's cranking music. He's swerving in and out. He's going too fast. And it's a blizzard outside. I mean, what is wrong with him?
Yeah.
So my takeaway is this, though, and it gets back to the central character in said film. Gordon Bombay is a tortured soul who has no idea who he is. And he doesn't need community service. He needs intense therapy, okay? Intense therapy. First of all, throughout the entire film, he rides a roller coaster of emotion that's not healthy. Like, at the first part, he's a jerk to the kids, and then he softens up. But then as soon as things turn against him, he sort of becomes a jerk again. And then he softens up. He's an immature brat. So that's one thing. The other thing is he has no clue what he's doing with his entire life, to the point of he coaches a peewee hockey team. Okay, that's cool. Peewee hockey team. He's a former really good peewee player from 1973. So if we extrapolate this and say that was 1973 and now he's a lawyer in present day, which I think was supposed to be 1992.
91 is when the movie was filmed.
Okay. Yeah. And so he is now going to go for a minor league hockey tryout at the end? Like, dude, you just coached a peewee team. You haven't coached you haven't played in years, and you supposedly quit playing.
He scored like 190 goals in a peewee season.
Wait, in 1973, Bombay. This is like 18 years out. Anyway, the point being,
fast hands don't leave you. The fast hands don't
anyway,
leave you.
Anyway, Gordon Bombay has no bleeping clue what he's doing in life. He needs help, and he shouldn't be around children because he's going to screw them up too. And so my takeaway was this character, incredibly flawed, messed up, needed help. The last thing that he should have been doing at the end was getting on a bus to go to some like American Hockey League or International Hockey
League.
We'll
get into that.
Tryout. Yeah.
I will give you, he is very, he is very codependent, and you'll see in future Ducks movies, which we will review at least more future Ducks movie.
For sure, the second.
Because the themes get even more ridiculous. But there is at one point he like gets slicked back hair and gets all – like he becomes nationally famous and – he rides the roller coaster of life. I think he could maybe read a book or two about stoicism and meditation.
Yeah. Can I say this too?
Calm himself a little bit.
So I actually went back and looked at the background of this film itself to find out where it started and stuff. The problem that this film had was this. It was written as a serious film. Like it was supposed to be – the Bombay character was supposed to be messed up. And then Disney bought it. And they're like, oh, no. Has to be a family film. And keep in mind, too, you guys. Keep in mind, too. The North Stars, Norm Green wanted to move the North Stars around this time to Anaheim. Mm-hmm. And he was going to. And the league stopped him. Stopped him and basically said, you can go anywhere but there because this film was so successful that the Mighty Ducks, they were bound and determined to launch a team with Disney involved in the league, which they did.
And they did. And so what? Just real quick on that note. So the league launched the Mighty Ducks off the back of this movie like a year or two later.
Yes.
And instead of paying an entry fee to the league, like when an expansion team comes in, like whenever the next NBA team comes in, whether it's in Las Vegas or in Seattle, they're going to pay like a $200 million entrance fee, and then that'll be spread across the owners. So Anaheim paid a $50 million fee just to the LA Kings so that they could be in the backyard and not – it was sort of a, hey, we're sorry, Kings. We're gonna put a team in your backyard. So, yeah. Anyways, Declan, what was your main takeaway?
All right. So it's been a few years since I've seen this movie. I've seen it, you know, a dozen of times. My main takeaway is this, and it struck me the – first opening scene, and then I was struggling with it throughout the course of the film. I'm going to have to defer to Phil for this conversation. My main takeaway was I couldn't tell if Judd was more like Coach Riley or Coach Bombay. So, Coach Riley.
Coach Riley.
You missed this shot, kid? You're not just letting the team down. You're letting me down, too. Like, he is just imposing his will on, like, an 8-year-old who, by the way, his dad died. Like he is tough love, dude. He is just a hard ass. And this clip even too, when they're confronted with one another.
Bunch of losers. That's right, Coach. They are losers. We hate losers, don't we? They don't even deserve to live. Maybe you're right. Maybe banks won't make a difference. But at least we're playing by the rules.
Why'd you turn against me, Gordon? For 6 years, I taught you how to skate. I taught you how to score. I taught you how to go for the W. You could have been one of the greats. And now look at yourself. You're not even a has-been. You're a never-was.
Great line.
Those kids not understanding sarcasm in that moment is one of the most infuriating parts of the
movie. I've got notes on that, too. That's idiots. Yes.
So I think it is more Coach Riley, but then Bombay, right? Like, Bombay also teaches the kids faking injuries, right? He needs there's some little help that he needs to get his life back. I see some Judd Zolgad and Coach Bombay as well.
Well, the coaching kids how to cheat to me, I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Boom. And then they're like all mad about it. I don't cheat. I'll bleep you.
You're terrible. Yeah.
This guy's a lawyer. He's showing you shortcuts.
That opening scene when he meets the kids and he asks who's the goalie and he goes, it's me, Coach, but I'm moving to Philly. I won't be here long. Thank you for sharing. Like I can see Judd coaching a Pee Wee team.
But that's the thing is, if you tell me if you're a fat kid and you're going to move.
Yeah. So my main takeaway was I saw Judd Zolgad in both and I was trying to figure out
Coach Riley. No, because I wouldn't. That guy is a psychotic competitor. I'm not. I'm more of a.
I think if you were a coach, I don't think you'd be exactly like either one, but I think you would be super impatient with incompetent people.
Yeah.
And so you would definitely get super, super mad at like some of the players that make mistakes.
I'd be Herb Brooks. Again.
So my main takeaway was I saw a lot of Judd Zolgad in the first 5 minutes of this film. I saw it in both of them.
All right, my main takeaway from this movie is that this might be the greatest coaching job in hockey history.
Yeah, I got notes on this.
Okay, let's think about how creative and brilliant Gordon Bombay is at maximizing a roster. You want to talk about like Kevin Cash and before he went to the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman with the Rays, just taking ragtag waiver claim players and drafted players and eighth round picks and winning 90 games every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, this dude, he invents the flying V and scores a huge goal in the championship game.
I got thoughts on that. Wait for it.
And teaches them how to cross the blue line without being offsides, which is great. The creativity, he brings figure skaters to a hockey team for more mobility, for more speed, and for the distraction factor. He teaches Fulton Reed how to skate just enough to rip that slap shot in key moments.
Which you never see.
On the power play.
Which you never see.
You saw it twice.
You saw it twice.
No, but you never see him like teach him. He just basically,
Well, they had him skating around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had him skating in the skyways downtown Minneapolis.
Yeah, on rollerblades.
He was at hockey practice with them, too, skating through the cones.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
He turns Goldberg. He instills confidence in Goldberg and Charlie Conway. And, I mean, just the creativity and the genius of Gordon Bombay. It's pretty amazing that he actually wasn't coaching earlier in life. I mean, how tormented he must have felt. But this is one of the great coaching jobs in hockey history.
Wow.
Miracle or this? Who was better?
Herb Brooks had better players.
The better coaching job.
Herb Brooks had the best amateur players in the world.
Or Emilio Estevez.
It's my Mount Rushmore of hockey coaches. Those two are on it for sure. Yep. Okay, what was your favorite thing about the Mighty Ducks, Judd?
Oh, this is easy. This is a slam dunk, boys. February 29th, 1992 was the date that the Minnesota North Stars played host to the Hartford Whalers. A 5-4 overtime loss when they attend the game. Yes, that is the Whale that they're playing. And there's actually good scenes from that. They clearly went and shot a ton from that game. And unlike splicing together, let's say, the Knicks-Kings game that was, you know, absolutely a garbage game and then trying to sell it as the NBA Finals, they do a very nice job of basically saying, hey, it's the present for the kids being successful. He takes them to this game at the Met, which is great. And then the second part that I love, too, was the brief appearance by former North Stars Basil McRae and Mike Modano.
McRae was a goon, right?
Yes. But I mean, But I love, so McRae has lines about, you know, aren't you Gordon Bombay? You're a legend, blah, blah, blah. And Mike Modano was probably around 20 at the time. And his line is, I heard you were a farmer. And like he delivers it as stiff as you possibly can.
And I think that, I thought that was great. The writing in this movie was questionable, to say the least. But
yes.
I think one of the themes throughout the movie was supposed to be, oh, people like remembering him as a hockey player and then misremembering what he does for a living, right? Because at one point someone said he was a doctor and then a farmer.
But the thing about it, too, is that Basil McRae grew up in Canada. Gordon Bombay was a legend, supposedly Pee Wee, I believe, in Minnesota. Basil McRae wouldn't have heard of Gordon Bombay under any circumstance. Under any. Did you guys see during the course of the North Stars Whalers game the boards at the Met? Because
there was a Kmart ad.
There was also a 1500 KSDP AM.
Wow.
Because they carried the games back then.
Carried the games, yeah.
Amazing. Yes.
Yeah,
Al called the games on our station. So yes, there was a station ad on the boards at Met Center.
Hey, Gordon Bombay, right?
You remember me?
Sure, from Pee Wee's. This guy used to rule in Pee Wee's.
This guy used to rule.
Oh yeah,
Pee-wee's.
I heard you're a farmer. Actually, I became a lawyer. But I'm coaching Pee Wee now, and this is my team, the Ducks. Ducks. This is Basil McRae and Mike Modano.
We didn't know. All right.
Hey, Ducks. Listen to this guy. He knows what he's talking about. If you ever want a shot, let me know. I'll get you a tryout in the minor league club. Thanks. Hey, I've seen you.
This is nearly 20 years after he played Pee Wee, and Basil McRae's just like, yeah. And I love how the kids mail in their lines. Kids, this is Basil McRae and Mike Modano. And they said, hey, kids, clamor about that. Hey, yeah, no. Oh, sorry. Okay. Like, that was the most mailed-in sequence.
Hilarious. All right, Dex, what was your favorite part of this movie?
I think a lot of people who love this movie know this fact, and it might even be in your factoids towards the end of this, as we usually like to do. But Connor Banks. He lives at 450.
Adam Banks.
Adam Banks.
Right?
I said Connor Banks. Yeah. Adam Banks lives at 450 North Hennepin Avenue. Did you guys Google where 450 North Hennepin Avenue is?
I thought about it, but.
I did. And at the time when they shot this film, it was a parking lot.
Yeah. So it's the, right now, it's basically, it's the intersection of the light rail at 5th. It's 5th and Hennepin. And
so
also,
down, right downtown.
Right in the heart of downtown. And
so it's like right across from the Loon, basically.
Yeah.
Basically, it's Augie's Strip Club. It's basically Augie's Strip Club.
What's wrong
it's
with
the
that?
Closest thing to it you can make. What? Like, Augie's is like 425, but it's the closest establishment to it. Like that Buzz Mart, the Copper Melt.
The Banks rock.
Yeah. So my favorite.
Yeah. Adam Banks' mom. She's a working woman. I don't know what
I don't know what she was doing at night, but Adam Banks formulating his hockey career. Living
right
above Augie's Strip Club, man.
Right downtown, too, man.
Yeah.
Right downtown. He was no hawk.
So, yeah, and a lot of people know that you know, anyone who loves this Mighty Ducks movie, and my God, there are a lot of Minnesotans who love this film, and I'm excited to do our final ranking when we get there. But my favorite part is the fact that 450 North Hennepin, is basically an intersection, but if you really want to get down to it, it's Augie's Strip Club.
That's
he
amazing.
Was living above Augie's Strip Club.
Oh, my God. That's actually a decent
segue. Where I spent
some
time myself.
Oh, really?
Augie's? Oh, I've been to Augie's.
Oh.
A friend of mine once dropped his cell phone in there by accident and had to go retrieve it the next day.
You had to go retrieve it?
No, a friend of mine. But I've been there. I used to go there. Yeah. Great wings.
Great wings.
I'm
huh?
sure they have amazing food there.
Great
chicken
wings.
Please welcome Tammy to the stage. Yeah.
Just here for the articles.
Just a true professional.
So my favorite thing about this movie was just like all of the Minnesota things nostalgically. I mean, you had the Skyway. I thought they were at one point they were skating through City Center. And Judd, you said it was also what was the other
the
part?
Old
the
conservatory?
Galleria.
Conservatory, okay. which is where the Target buildings are now.
Yeah.
They tore it
down.
That
was
didn't work
that
out.
Was amazing. There was early the first scene in the movie, was it Liquor Lyle's or Lee's Liquor Lounge that they were I thought there was one of those two, like over by what's the one over by Target Field? I think that's Lee's Liquor
Lounge.
Lee's
Liquor
that's
Lounge.
Lee's Liquor's
yes,
Lounge.
It is.
Liquor Lyle's in Uptown.
Yep.
And just closed, right?
Yes, I believe
it's gonna be sold, yeah.
Yep.
It might yeah.
You had Coon Rapids Ice Arena, New Hope Ice Arena.
Minnetonka Ice Arena.
There was a Minnetonka Ice Arena.
Mm-hmm.
You had Mickey's Diner, the Met Center, just all of these either iconic places or just sort of random arenas, like the New Hope Ice Arena. It's kind of just a random arena.
Where did the Conways live? Because like I couldn't figure out where they live.
It's in my least favorite parts of this movie.
Okay.
I'll save it.
I'll stop.
We'll save it.
I was just curious.
Okay. Well, let's go in reverse order. We'll go back to Declan here. What was your least favorite part of this
movie?
Okay,
so my least favorite part is, so he lives in Minneapolis. That's clear. That's very, very clear.
Yep.
The Minnesota in me, although loves the nostalgia and loves all the artifacts in Minnesota, I don't love the Minneapolis-St. Paul cross. So she lives in Minneapolis, but she works at Mickey's Diner.
Yeah.
As someone who grew up a St. Paul kid, I grew up in St. Paul.
Yeah.
No person lives in Minneapolis and works at Mickey's Diner. Second.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that would work in Minneapolis and live in St. Paul and vice versa.
Correct.
But I'm not saying this to be demeaning. If you're a waitress, why would you travel all the way to St. Paul when there's a million restaurants you could work at?
And
it doesn't make sense.
The fact when he finally, when Bombay takes her on a date. So he is back home in Minneapolis. She has come home from work at Mickey's. And then I believe they are back at Rice Park in St. Paul at the Landmark. So they went from St. Paul
thank you.
To Minneapolis.
I was getting really confused.
Date night back to St. Paul would never happen. And especially in the wintertime. In the wintertime, you would not be commuting back and forth twice in that span for a date night. No way that would happen. So there was some Minnesota misconnections here that really irked me because I know that would just absolutely not happen. Those are my least favorite
parts. This is like when Philadelphia people watch the original Rocky movie.
Right.
When he does his iconic run throughout the city, and they keep showing shots of him in the industrial section. Then he's running up the steps of the old library, right? And if you're not from Philadelphia, you're just like, oh, he's running through the city, and he finishes his run at the top of the hill. And somebody mapped out, like, scene by scene, okay, he's running here at this point, he's running here. And they mapped out, if you would have made that run, it would have been like a 28-mile run.
Spoiler alert, if we do number two, the intro is even worse to the Mighty Ducks in terms of the geographical unbelievableness that happens
Let's
in the first 90 seconds.
Love it.
We should do. Let's not do it next week, but let's definitely
do
D2 at some point.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So that's my least favorite.
All right, Joe, what's your least favorite part of this movie?
Dex, please play the clip that you played previously where Bombay is talking to Coach Riley.
Bunch of losers.
That's right, Coach. They are losers. We hate losers, don't we? They don't even deserve to live. Maybe you're right. Maybe banks won't make a difference. But at least we're playing by the rules.
Why'd you turn against me, Gordon? For 6 years, I taught you how to skate. I taught you how to score. I taught you how to go for the W. You could have been one of the greats. And now look at yourself. You're not even a has-been. You're a never-was.
Okay. So here's the thing about this film. The writing was really weird because I thought they did some things pretty well for what they were trying to get at. Okay? Case in point of a thing I liked. I liked the fact that Bombay's relationship with Pacey's mom. I liked the fact that basically wasn't a ton of storyline. Like, they could have developed that a little bit more, and they really didn't, which I applaud. But what Declan just played, that clip drives me crazy. It is so lazy of the writers to have, okay, here's what we're going to do. Two of the kids are going to be behind a wall or a pole sort of listening to this. And, of course, there's going to be the misinterpretation of what Gordon Bombay says. And they're going to think that he thinks that they're a bunch of heels and losers and that they're no good. But that's really not what he means. But we're going to address two things at once. And it's so creative. And then they're going to get mad. And it's going to create a rift in the film. Come on. Like, it is so lazy. It was so stupid. I can't begin. The scene itself is absolutely fine, and it could have just been a scene. But to have, two of the players who are a little volatile are going to hear it. And I hated it. I hated it because I thought it was so, so lazy of the people that wrote this film.
Yeah, it was weird. Like the fact that these kids are smart enough in a lot of ways throughout the movie, right? These are like,
and they're street smart. They're supposed to be street smart.
Yeah, and they don't pick up on a clear argument between these two guys. And why are they even there? Like, they're just hiding behind a wall.
Exactly.
Like, it was foreign. Yeah, it was like, super weird.
Are they going to the concession stand and they just hear their coach talking and decide, let's hang back here so that we can spy on Mr. Bombay?
Yeah, it was bizarre. It kind of goes hand in hand with my least favorite thing in this movie. What is the deal with the evil career Pee-wee coach? So, like, he's just coached the Hawks Pee-wee team for, like, 20 or 30 years.
And looks the same, by the way.
And he looks the same as he did in
He looks better in 91 than he did in 73.
Yeah, like, they couldn't have given him, like, a beard or something. Isn't that weird? So he literally looks the same as he did 20 years earlier. Didn't they think at some point, all right, let's give him like a gray beard and have him just be kind of an old codger at this point. And no, he looks
get a different actor to play the young coach.
That would work too. But I don't really understand. I don't understand why he's still coaching peewees and why wouldn't correct me if I'm wrong here, but like, wouldn't most peewee coaches be fathers of kids or like it would be dads, right? Or moms like coaching teams.
So.
He's just a random guy that just coaches little 10-year-old.
Well, and berates them and rides them into the ground. Like, who wouldn't have got this guy fired at some point?
Yeah, and then there's the scenes where he tells when Adam Banks goes and plays for the Ducks and they're playing in the championship game, and he brings those two Adam's former friends over and says, I want you to take him out, right? And so they take him out, and he runs into the pole after hitting a goal or whatever. And so the referee takes one of the kids, and I think – puts him in the penalty box for 2 minutes. By the way, he just like almost murdered Adam Banks on the ice.
2 minutes.
Fulton Reed comes over and just dumps a player into the bench and gets a game misconduct, and he's out of the game for good. And Hawks player almost kills Adam Banks and just gets a 2 minute minor, which is amazing. And then as Hawks player is going into the penalty box, the evil coach walks over and gives him a little high five, like, yeah, that's okay. So just evil peewee coach for 20 years, 30 years is just a weird concept.
And he wouldn't have been fired. Like, he didn't get fired. He wouldn't be fired at some point. I mean, like, he is evil to these kids. And also, why did they write in the line there? So Banks gets hit, and he's clearly unconscious, or he's hurt pretty badly. And the one kid who still likes Banks says to the kid that ran him into the post, what did you do? And the kid says back, my job.
My job.
Like, why is that in there? Like, okay, we get the fact that these people are bad. Like, you know, my job. Anyway.
I love it. Yeah. By the way, are the Hawks supposed to be Edina?
Yes. I think
referring to them as
cake eaters. I think so. That was my takeaway.
Okay.
Yes, because the one kid on the Ducks keeps calling Banks that. So I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay, what was the least believable part of this movie? We'll go back to Declan here.
Oh, my God. I have so many least believable parts here.
Fire away.
From the kids wearing warm-up hoodies and football helmets. In yes. Okay, I understand it's District 5, but you're telling me, you guys have to have a uniform. Like, Charlie Conway's wearing a Gopher hockey sweatshirt.
Well, you have to have, the right
helmet.
Safety equipment.
Yeah, and yeah. safety.
And they don't have it at all.
Yeah, there's guys wearing football helmets.
Yes.
Also, the drawn-up plays. I know the flying V is cool. That doesn't work. I forget who's the girl that does the spin to distract them while she's figure skating. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
But probably my favorite one, my least believable part, is they keep showing the newspaper clippings of their big wins towards the end. I don't know if you noticed this, but on the publication it says America's number one hockey publication. America's number one hockey publication is covering a Pee Wee hockey league in Minnesota. Look, we are the state of hockey. Let's own that, and we love it. There is zero chance the number one hockey publication is covering 9-year-old Pee Wee hockey tournaments. It does not happen.
Actually, that is a real publication. Let's Play Hockey is a real publication.
I know Let's Play Hockey.
Which has that tag. And yes, it is hilarious that every week all they do is cover District 5. So every single week.
Declan has hit on my least believable thing in this movie is just the extensive media coverage for Pee Wee hockey. Everything
the radio,
from
the radio calls,
game recaps, play by play of the games, and now here comes Gordon Bombay. It's in the 70s.
It's all on the marble for the 19th. You are listening to the State Pee Wee Hockey Championship on 1500 KSDP AM. Coming up next, music. Yes.
It's hilarious. And then people, you know, everyone has the newspaper clipping of, why does Hans have the newspaper clipping of Gordon missing the penalty shot?
Because you got to remember your failures. He says that.
Why? What do you
mean? Because he celebrated. Because he probably had cash on the opposing team. Hans is probably gambling on the opposing team to the Hawks.
I love it. And what I want to know is, who are the play-by-play announcers for these Pee Wee hockey? Is it on cable 12?
Dude, it was 1973. It was radio. There was no cable 12.
Anthony LaPanta just calling some Pee Wee hockey games.
Bombay.
Yeah. Conway, over to Reed.
Dan Tierhart.
Conway loses
back
the puck.
To Carp.
Yeah.
Carp, Reed. Carp, back to Reed. Over to Conway.
Back to Fulton. Right. Fulton fires goes one.
All right. So here's mine. Least believable part. So these kids suck. These kids are awful. They can barely skate. And you know what? That's fine. They're peewees. It's not surprising. But Bombay basically decides that he likes them, embraces these kids in being their coach, and takes them to get the equipment. And slowly but surely, they don't just sort of improve. So, hey, they're better. That's great. They become elite-level peewee players. Yes. So by the end...
Wait for D2 and D3, by the way.
By the end, they are a freaking machine. They are like Shattuck St. Mary's. They are, I mean, the flying V works...
Almost good enough to make up the entire U.S. national team in a sequel coming to you soon.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Dude, it's unreal.
But I mean, all of a sudden... And then there were confusing things about who was doing what, and Deck said, the girl who's on the team, and they set up the play where she's by the goal twirling, but she's on figure skates, which I don't even know if you can wear hockey.
You can't.
Okay, so she's on those skates, and unless I missed it, I saw her be recruited onto the team, but I really didn't see her playing a role before she suddenly serves as a distraction. But I just, the fact that these kids could barely stand up on skates and then get equipment and it somehow morphs them into the 1980 U.S. Olympic team, to me, I struggled with a little bit. I do think this to me was written as originally the Bad News Bears for hockey. And Disney said, oh, no, no, it's going to be happier than that.
Yeah.
Because Gordon Bombay... And we'll talk about the acting ability of Estevez here. But Gordon Bombay shares a lot of the same issues as Buttermaker did in Bad News Bears. But Matthau's a great actor. And Emilio Estevez, not so much. But I really think the characters were supposed to be sort of the same crusty, sort of drunken, lives falling apart, kids help them. But it wasn't supposed to be probably as positive as what Disney did to the Mighty Ducks.
I remember, it's funny, like watching this back last night. It's been at least 10 years since I've seen this movie. And I remember in my head Emilio Estevez being a much better actor than he was in this movie. Just because of all the big movies he was in. I mean, not all of them. He was in a handful of big movies, I guess.
Brat
including
Pack.
The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, the Brat Pack.
Yeah, the Brat Pack movies.
Yeah.
And he was just a really bad actor in this movie, I guess.
I don't think he could carry a film.
He couldn't carry a film, but I also don't think that he thought this was going to be a big movie. In fact, there are reports that say like he's kind of shocked at how much this defines his career.
Yeah,
and it really is. It's the defining. I think this defines his career more than Breakfast Club does. All right, who are we still on? Least believable thing?
No, I think we all divulged there.
Okay,
we're good.
Okay, what's before we get to some of the other categories here, I want to throw out a couple things at you guys quick. So NHL comparisons I want from you guys, from Judd's Hockey Show.
Oh,
NHL comparisons for, let's start with Adam Banks. NHL comp for Adam Banks.
Well, he's supposed to be Gretzky.
Right, yeah.
99, because he wears the jersey.
Wears
but he's not. You know what? He's Dex, I think he's okay. He's good. I don't think he's great. Mm. I mean, he's playing with kids who 3 months before could barely stand up on skates.
Is he Fiala?
No, you know what I think? Reality check? Probably like Ryan Hartman. The reality check of Banks is probably
he's
Ryan Hartman.
What? No.
He's Ryan Hartman.
That's an insult to Banks. What are you talking about?
Overrated.
Dude, Banks is a stud, man.
No, he's
Banks
supposed to be.
Stud.
What I'm saying, overrated. He's the next one who's going to end up with a broken life, having drank too much. In community service.
Is that Ryan Hartman?
Why do you think that?
Because he's not that good. He's not as good as he thinks he is.
I think he's the best player in the movie.
Is the best player in the entire franchise.
He's supposed to be.
He's clearly going to play in the NHL someday.
Yeah.
I am serving a reality check to say no, he's not.
Okay. All right, NHL comp for Fulton Reed.
Go ahead, Declan.
Big defenseman who's got a big slapper but doesn't really... I can see some Bufflin in him. Like, you know, he's a big dude. He's got a big slap shot. Bufflin hasn't played in a couple years for personal reasons, but I can see some Dustin Bufflin in his game. What do you think, Judd? Who has another defenseman that pops
Dustin
him
Bufflin
with, like, a
was
heart?
Pretty good. This guy has a good slap shot, but he
can
really
can't rack up
skate.
Some penalty minutes. He's an enforcer who's got a little offense.
Bugard.
But Bugard didn't have a shot. Like, Bugard's priority was to throw hands.
But this kid's a goon. I mean, he tossed a kid into the bench. He lifted him up and tossed him into the bench. Yeah. He's a goon.
What about Charlie Conway?
Zach Parise.
I was going to say, Zach Parise, right?
It's Zach Parise.
Not the most skilled, but he's gritty, great leader.
Yeah, that's probably
he
good.
He always chokes, right? I think that's the line. Whoa! No, that's the line
I
to use the Conway.
That's
the line.
Declan Goff.
That's the line one of the kids uses the Conway at the first practice.
But you just said it in relation. You said Zach Parise, and then he always chokes.
Well,
whoa.
I mean,
you thought I was being mean to Ryan Hartman?
Where's the evidence? He went to the finals once and made it to the second round.
I did not see that coming.
By the way, Charlie Conway definitely didn't choke on that penalty shot.
No, he didn't, though.
He made it like his coach did.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Have you worked on your move? How about you finish what you started?
One production note here. Jake Gyllenhaal turned down the role of Charlie Conway. Emilio Estevez was cast in 1991 as the director was impressed by his performances in Brat Pack films, The Outsiders, The Breakfast Club, and St. Elmo's Fire from the mid-1980s.
I've got two notes off of that right here, Phil Mackey, because I was so intrigued by this film. Jake Gyllenhaal's parents stopped him from taking the role. His parents put their foot down and said, no, you're too young. And Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez's brother, was originally offered the Bombay role.
Wow.
According to the notes I've got here, he was offered the role for Gordon Bombay but turned it down, and Emilio Estevez, his brother, took the role later on.
Funny.
I could totally see that. Like, envisioning his character in Major League but as a hockey coach.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see that. One other note on this here, Just Gordon's relationship with Charlie's mom is super weird. Like, she hates him at the beginning. And then there's that whole scene where they're at, I think it's the Rice Park scene, where she's fantasizing about living in an ice castle, and that's my room up there. Yeah. And then I gave Charlie that room, and then Gordon, you know, Gordon's like, oh, which room can I have? And just, you know, like an easy transition of like the topic, right? Well, what room can I have? And she stares at him like, what? Why are you already thinking about our future together? You can't just come into our lives and envision us living in this ice castle together. What are you doing?
She's very jaded. She's very jaded. I feel like there was a story arc for her that didn't get told, like about the ex.
I'm good with that, by the
way. Yeah, by the way.
I am too. No, I actually, my favorite part about the relationships in this film was the fact that they didn't develop that one too much. I was really, because they could have done way more with it. I was so happy. There was no obligatory sex scene. There was none of that. I was very happy about that.
Actually, would this have been the weirdest if they would have thrown in an obligatory sex scene between Gordon Bombay and Charlie's mom about two-thirds of the way through? Would it have been the weirdest, most out of place? Like just a 7-minute, just uncomfortable. God. And then boom, they're back in the ring.
7 minutes?
Day.
Jesus.
What? I mean, he must be a champion if it's 7 minutes. If you can give him 7 minutes in a film, I know a lot of people that really look up to Emilio Estevez.
He is Gordon Bombay.
Game of Thrones doesn't even go 7 minutes. I mean, like that's vulgar. That's a lot.
Vulgar. All right. Vulgar.
The last couple categories here, boys. So we're gonna. So we've done the villain rankings in Action Movie Rewind. We've done the relationship rankings in Rom-Com Rewind. We're gonna do the believability of the sports action alone. Yep. Rankings here.
All right.
And so we're looking for a score 1 through 10, just the believability of the sports action alone as a category. 1 through 10, Judd.
Well, if it was based on the Hawks and their play, I'd give it a 9 because the Hawks looked very real. But unfortunately, it's not the two-side story here. I'm going to give it a 3. It gets a 3.
That's actually pretty generous.
There was a figure skater to the set. Well, but keep in mind, too, in the last 2 months, we have watched a film that had a Knicks-Kings NBA Finals, okay?
It's true. That's true.
So I've been out on the limb.
With Lawrence Funderburk in the last minute.
Bobby Jackson. So I'll give it a 3 because some of it was the one thing that I thought was hilarious, though, was when Conway takes the penalty shot to win the entire thing, and he doesn't wear his helmet. Like, it's just off. Like, it's like also, circa 1971 the National Hockey League.
The cockiness of Conway to do, like, 4 circles before he takes the puck. like, it's one thing. Like, I could see an NHL player doing that, like, just doing a couple circles, getting ready to go. But, like, Charlie, this is a peewee game. Slow your jets, bro. Like, cool your jets a little bit here, man. Like, you've also
but
usually
he's got no helmet on.
Like, I love that, though. I love
that. No, but it's hilarious. It's peewee hockey. They, like, you'd be tossed out for that.
Some great hockey. Charlie Conway with some great hockey here.
3
great
for me.
Yeah, the believability. Yeah, I think, honestly, I'm going to top out and say 3 as well. I mean, also Goldberg, and if we do number 2, we will find why Goldberg's even a more flawed goalie and why the belief in Goldberg is just not.
So he doesn't move to Philadelphia?
Like, he doesn't. What? Spoiler alert, he doesn't.
Why did they put that line in the movie then? Like, you didn't even
need
that line.
And let's just say another goaltender gives him a run for his money and is clearly the better netminder.
Oh, Jim Craig shows
going
up, huh?
Forward. Yeah, seriously. Like, he is Janicek. Like, yeah, Janicek won you a national championship. Like, we're not playing for a national championship here, Craig.
Oh, that's a great. I love that line.
But at the same time, yeah, like, there's roller skating. He basically takes this band of misfits. And also, the scene where he first meets the team, I don't think that's a pond. Like, it looks like everyone's like, oh, you can't go on the ice. That's the ice. It's like, is that like a, that looks like a field that you just flooded.
What
it's
park
not, I
is think
that? It is.
Pearl. I think it's Pearl Park in Minneapolis. I think it's Pearl Park.
Is there a pond there or no?
I know there's a bunch of baseball fields there. I've never seen an ice. Yes, there is. There is. That's where Hockey Day. Well, I don't know if it's the exact site where Hockey Day was in Minneapolis in 2020, but.
Oh, I thought that was a parade.
I think it's. Well, that is parade. Yes, that Hockey Day was parade.
Okay.
But I think we're there. I think that's Pearl because it's the skyline view. I mean, yeah, I think that's Pearl Park.
Dumb question.
I have baseball games there.
Where's Pearl Park?
Right off 394 and Penn. So you turn right.
I try by it every day.
Yeah, you literally, it's the first exit off Penn, off 394. You turn right. It's a bunch
of
ball
nice
fields.
It's a very nice area. Some nice houses over there.
Really
some
nice
great
place.
Baseball fields.
But it's a 3.
Judd, you should get out and explore Minneapolis once in a while.
Seriously, guy.
That's hilarious. I drive by that park, Penn, on a daily basis.
It's a 3.
It's a 3 for you guys. It's a 2 for me. I mean, my God, like there's the only realistic thing in this movie was Adam Banks just being a really good kid hockey player.
The Hawks are realistic. They're really good.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like their goaltender looks the part.
Yeah, so but it's a 2 for me, and that makes it a 2.7 when you take the 3 scores into consideration. So 2.7 out of 10 on believability of sports action.
Okay,
now it's just the movie rated by entertainment value, 1 through 10. Judd.
I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay.
It's a 6. It was fine. It was if it hadn't been a Disney production, I actually think it's higher because it, you know, the Bombay character then probably is a little bit more real and jaded, which I would have liked personally. but I'll go 6. I enjoyed it. I'm not sorry I didn't watch it for 30 years.
Okay.
Dex?
Again, I think the Minnesotans love this. This is a gospel to them. Seriously, this movie is gospel to them. They hockey fans especially. I shouldn't say all Minnesotans, but hockey fans, this is gospel to them. And a bunch of kids my age, because this came out in 92. I was born in 92. If you're from that era, you're a 90s baby. Like, this is one of the iconic sports movies. That being said, it's a very flawed film, dude. It is not that great of a movie. So I'm still going to give this a 7. Which is generous, in my opinion. It's generous for how much I'm talking smack about it, but it's fine, and I like to rewatch it again because it reminds me of being a kid, and it's Minnesota, so if I wasn't from Minnesota, it's probably lower, honestly. It probably is, but it's a 7. It's not a great movie. It's good. I'm glad I watched it again for the first time in a while, but it's a 7.
So I think being from Minnesota and just it's a Minnesota movie. I mean, there's a few of these, and I'll get to a list of options for the next one, which also includes a Minnesota movie. But it's an 8 for me. I think, like, obviously, the believability is very low. But it's if you can just put aside the believability of the sports for a second, it's entertaining from two perspectives. It's sort of just a popcorn candy, predictable sports movie. But it's also entertaining because there's so many unintentional laughs and bad acting. And so it's one of those movies that I just love to watch whenever it happens to be on. So it's an 8 for me, which makes it a 7 average score between the three of us for the Mighty Ducks. Boys, I think we should do another sports movie next week. I think we should go on a little run of sports movies here and give the people what they want. And because it's baseball season, I have 3 baseball sports movies from similar era, like late 80s to the mid 90s. I want to throw
for
these
love of the
out
game is
somewhere.
Out. I'm not doing that.
Late 90s. Okay. We'll get to that at some point. No. We will do that one at some point.
Just awful.
Okay.
He flirts with a perfect game.
The mechanism.
So I want to throw these 3 out, and then we can discuss and maybe pick one at random, okay? So the original Major League from 1989.
Okay.
Sandlot. Oh, God. And then Minnesota-based Little Big League. From 1994.
Ooh, I like all these movies. I'm cool with any of these.
Sandlot's
classic.
I almost feel like we should do some.
Yeah,
because I think I would praise Sandlot. I think it's great.
Then I think the best one for the purposes of
Little Big League is going to be
Little Big League.
Yeah,
yeah. May as well keep going.
I've only seen parts of this film. I have never seen the whole thing.
Young Valley Fair, Big Valley Fair part in this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Pre-Wild Thing, I think, Valley Fair.
It was
one of the first year Valley Fair is open, I think.
Yeah. Yep. This is early Valley Fair. All right. So we're doing Little Big League next week for Minnesota or for Sports Movie Rewind. It really is Minnesota Sports Movie Rewind because
Little
Big be back-to-back
League.
Minnesota.
Let's just do all films right. From here. There's a ton of films.
All Minnesota films?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. What's Jingle All the Way? Wasn't that shot here, too?
Yeah, that was shot up. We almost did that. Another... Yeah.
What was the Christian Slater one? Baboon Heart or something? Do you guys recall that one?
I've seen them.
No, I don't think
it was right after he. I think it was right after he did Heathers, which is an absolute classic film. I think, and he shot a film here. I think the state had better tax breaks in the 90s for film.
Yeah,
no, I'm dead serious.
I think it did too.
I'm not joking. I think we had tax breaks here that might have gone away. Let's get them back. Well, I love Hollywood.
Well, there it is. That's Judd's first ever viewing of The Mighty Ducks.
I'm glad I saw it.
We'll put D2 on the list at some point.
I'll wait 30 years.
That one might even have more fodder for us, D2.
How bad is
it?
It's flawed.
It's
It's flawed.
I love how Declan now has to pick apart things from his childhood and just admit that they were probably crap.
Oh,
and it's
awful,
it's
dude.
Painful because he can't help himself. He has to do it. But he just like covers his eyes and says stuff like, it was flawed.
Oh, God. Julie the cat. Yeah. Julie the cat.
All right. Like, we got to run. That's a wrap on Mackie and Judd for today. Don't forget to check out our YouTube channel, Score North MN, and Purple Daily Podcast for daily Vikings conversations. We'll see you guys later.